Holy shit, if it isn't Mon Frere.
Come, son of Jarrell, kneel before Zod! Snitchy Boochies.
Come on, you fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
Welcome. This is the first episode of the new Graphically Speaking podcast, and I'm Brian Lipsitz of the Geek Generation. And this is a work in progress today, so we'll see how this goes. But for my help today, I got my special co-host, Rob V. How are you doing?
The tables have turned.
Exactly. The tables have turned now.
This is awkward. I don't know if I like it.
It's the other side of the other side of the table. But yeah, so basically, just going to give everyone a quick overview. What I'm kind of trying to do here is going to, for a test this week, is going to try to see, you know, a little do some discussions about comics and comic-related things and see how that goes. So I'm going to get right into it. I'm going to try to explain how I got into comics and why I'm so obsessed with comics. My first interaction with a comic book was my grandfather, I think, gave me a comic book when I was like 3 or 4. I don't remember if it was either Superman or Transformers, but it was something to do with that. So since then, I was a big fan of superheroes as a kid. I had like the Superman PJs and, you know, the Super Friends cartoon and all that sort of stuff. So
Woody PJs with the cape?
Yeah, hell yeah, dude, with the clip-on cape with the Velcro.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I always as a kid, I always had those the superpowers figures and all that stuff. So I was, even as a little kid, I was always drawn to superheroes, which I think most kids are. But as I got older, I never really read comics up until I think I was around 9 or 10. And I live in Massachusetts, and there's a library the next town over that had in the kids section, they had a little bucket full of old comics that people could, I guess, bring in if they were done with them, or to give to the library, and you could take them. And I found an issue of Amazing Spider-Man, and I do believe I forget the exact issue number, but it had Venom on the cover holding Spider-Man's, like, looked like his skull, and it freaked me out, but I thought it was the coolest thing ever, so I took that home and read it. And since then, I was pretty much hooked. So from 1990 on, I've been reading pretty consistently through the bad and the good. So that's just a little background on me of when I got into it. So Rob, when did you get into comics? What was your first experience?
I don't remember how old I was.
Yeah.
My long-term memory is shot from all this recording and stuff. All these computers I look at just drain my brain.
Yeah.
But I remember some flashes of some of the first comic books that I did get my hands on. They were given to me. And that would be, what was it? I had an ALF comic.
Nice.
And I remember a Marvel comic called Semper Fi. That was like a military one.
You're even outdating me. I don't even remember that now. Joking.
That's, oh, really? See, I like the ALF one because it was funny and I was a kid. And the Semper Fi one I just thought was really freaking boring. Because it was an army military comic. And I was probably like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
What the hell am I going to do with that? but the whole reason I got into comics to begin with was I was just digging Saturday morning cartoons and all the superheroes and whatnot. I was way into He-Man and Spider-Man.
Yep, same here.
And then that progressed to like Super Friends. And that was really just like the whole superhero obsession origins for me.
Yeah, I really think that's right along my lines. I mean, I remember as a kid watching Spider-Man as an Amazing Friends every like Saturday morning and thinking like it was just the greatest thing in the world. And so, yeah, I've always, again, He-Man, Thundercats, all that kind of stuff that, you know, and I think actually I do remember even before that Spider-Man comic, I think I may have read a G.I. Joe comic because I, you know, having G.I. Joe toys, I think I was drawn to like the comic book tie-ins to the toys. And I think G.I. Joe was a big one that, you know, I read as a kid just because it was G.I. Joe. I love the cartoon. So I got some questions for you, sir.
Uh-oh.
Going to throw them at you. I'm on this side now. No. Who's your favorite character? But I think I already know this. This is going to be such a hard question for you.
Yeah, I know. This is super tough. Let me think for about 9 hours and I'll get back to you. Anyone who's listened to my show is well aware that I am a huge Batman fan. I'm actually wearing a Geek Generation t-shirt and a Batman hoodie right now. I love Batman to the point where I almost always have something Batman on me. For years, it was like a logo necklace that I wore. And now it's almost always a belt. I wear that to work and everything too. All my students know that I love Batman. I have a Batman lunchbox. I don't even try to hide it anymore.
It's awesome. Pointless.
And I actually wrote my my entrance essay for college about how I use Batman as an example for how I live my own life.
Dude, you are my hero. I never knew that. That is the coolest thing I've ever heard, seriously.
I still have it, and I had posted it at one point, and maybe I should post it again. It's probably kind of corny at this point because I literally say at one point, I'm like, what would Batman do? It's that type of idea. But he's one of my heroes. When people ask who your heroes are, he's not just one of my favorite characters. He, along with George Carlin and Howard Stern, he is one of my heroes and role models that I do model my life after.
Yeah, I mean, not to get outside of like the website, but like I remember when I was first, you were even mentioned as Megan Hanley, who's been on the show before, she's like, I have this friend Rob, he's obsessed with Batman, and like that was the first thing that I ever heard about you. So
that tends to be one of the first things people mention about me. Yeah.
So, all right, so now I got some questions about Batman for you. So, who is your
testing my knowledge or
not testing your knowledge. You're pretty more not testing your knowledge. I wouldn't do that.
Because I can tell you the exact time that his parents were killed.
Seriously? What time was that?
I don't know the date, but it did happen at 10:47 p.m., which is the time that you set the grandfather clock to get into the Batcave.
Holy crap, you just schooled me. I had no idea on that. Maybe you should you should be the comic book person on this website.
Oh no, I'm limited to one character.
Hey, but that's obscure. That's obscure. That's good stuff. So I'm just gonna ask you some, you know, these are pretty softball questions to start, but who's your favorite Batman villain?
Batman villain. I think it's pretty safe to say the Joker. I mean, anyone who's a Batman fan sees how much of a yin to the yang that the Joker is for Batman.
Yeah, it's like a dichotomy. It's like chaos and order type thing.
Yeah, but there are so many freaking good. I mean, one of the reasons that Batman is a great character is because of the Rogues Gallery. So I know that's kind of looking beyond the character, but it's all the same universe.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what pulled me into it originally. Every single villain, and this could be a whole show in itself, so I'm not going to get into it now.
No, yeah.
But every villain portrays a different psychological aspect of Batman, like reflected back at him.
Yeah, I always fully agree that like Batman and Spider-Man were the two greatest rogues galleries in all of comic books. Like I'd say Batman actually wins out, like you said, because they're more psychological, where Spider-Mans are more like, I don't know, animal-based and like weird. But yeah, just Batman, like there's so many you can go through. Like you're right, we could spend a whole show just discussing what each one, and each one has such a great like backstory. So I mean, it's fantastic. But all right, so my next question: who is your favorite supporting cast member? Now this can be from the comics, the animated series, the movies, you know, anything in Batman. Who's your favorite supporting cast member? That's connected to Batman.
I'm gonna say Dr. Chase Meridian because she's freaking hot. No, but more seriously, God, that is expansive. It's hard to go further than, oh my God. I'm tempted to say Dick Grayson, mm-hmm. because I love Nightwing and he was the original Robin, mm-hmm. and he does so much in the Batman universe. But because of my love for Batman Beyond.
Yep.
I'm gonna say Terry McGinnis.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm not expecting that. That's a good one. I always likened Commissioner Gordon, I think, because I think without Commissioner Gordon, you sort of get Batman into the realm of like, I don't know. To me, he always seemed like if he wasn't working alongside the police, it almost seems like he'd be kind of like I don't know. Not to say that he wouldn't stop himself, but it's sort of like keeps him in line a little bit because he's sort of connected to, you know, Commissioner Gordon's his like tether to like the police kind of still. So I don't know. I always liked the interaction between Batman and Commissioner Gordon over the years, although from time to time like the 60s show was terrible with like, you know, the bat phone, yeah. And you know that stuff, but
oh God, don't even bring that up to me. That is the bane of my existence, not to borrow another
pun.
Character,
yeah.
From the no, but the Terry McGinnis thing, I think I really like that character because obviously I love Batman and Bruce is unique and he is Batman. I mean, Terry, I don't even look at him as Batman. I almost look at him as like another version of Robin or something like that. But since I did start off my superhero obsession by looking at characters more in the tone of Spider-Man before I discovered Batman. I feel like Terry McGinnis is like that unique combination of the two characters where he has the skills and the knowledge and things that Bruce taught him, and yet he still has that like snarky attitude that Spider-Man has.
Yeah, you're right. It's like it's like a younger Batman but without the like super obsession and like
Yeah, he's not jaded like Bruce.
Exactly. And you know what it's funny is that, not to go on a Batman Beyond tangent, but I remember when that show was first announced, and I was so – because, like, you had Batman, the animated series, then you had Superman, the animated series, which were both – Superman wasn't as good, but it was still phenomenal above anything else. And I remember them saying, you know, we're going to start doing the Batman Beyond. And I read the – I remember being in high school and reading, like, the, you know, plot description, and I was like, oh, this is going to be terrible. What are they doing putting Batman in the future with a young Batman? I'm like
– oh, my God, I was terrified. The thought of anyone else in the cowl pissed me off.
Yeah, and I was like, this is going to be terrible. They've ruined it. And then I watched it, and I was like, I was completely 100% wrong. I don't think I've ever seen anything where, from reading the conception of it, thinking it was terrible, to actually seeing it being like a million thousand times better than I could have ever expected. And just like, I should have put my trust in them, but it was just like, they were just like, they knew what they were doing. And, you know, I still can't believe that it was a good show. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like wrapping your head around it. It was such a risk for them, but they did it in such a right way that it just paid off. I mean, to the point where they brought him into Justice League and, you know, Justice League Unlimited and, you know, Batman Beyond has become a part of the Batman franchise to the point where they actually have an ongoing comic book now in DC of Batman.
Right.
So it's just crazy. Here's an interesting question for you, which I don't know. It's kind of a tacky question, but
bring it.
Do you think Bruce Wayne should or will ever settle down? Or do you think it would be until he stops being Batman, will he ever, you know, ever have a long-term romance? Or do you think he can't handle that because of being Batman and his mission?
I think that he is tempted by his human nature to look for a mate. That's why the plays with Catwoman and Talia al Ghul go down. But ultimately, he finds them all to be a distraction from his mission. I think his life is too set on the path of what he's doing that I don't see him ever settling down with someone and really putting it behind him. I really thought the way, not to get back to Batman Beyond, but I think the way that they wrote him off as Batman was pretty much the only way that it could be done, because he is the type of person who would persevere until he was dead.
Yeah.
But instead he, in a moment of desperation, picked up a gun and almost did the same thing to someone else that happened to his parents. And the fact that he had to resort to that, there's no other way they could have had him stop being Batman than that. That was perfect.
Okay, I will say, don't hate me, I will say the one thing I didn't really like about Batman Beyond was the only thing I didn't slightly dislike was I never felt that the whole thing of, you know, Bruce Wayne having a relationship with Barbara Gordon at some point, I thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. Unfortunately, they never really went into it.
No. But I mean, like, I was always like, because, you know, they always patterned it off with Dick Grayson and even in the comics. And I was kind of like, why would Bruce? They just seemed kind of weird. But yeah, that was the only other thing that ever bugged me. But
see, the thing is, I don't think Bruce is incapable of settling down. Mm-hmm. I think the world won't let him.
True.
Because he's created this persona. And as much as he's tempted, I think he wants to be happy, and I like the way they played with that in Mask of the Phantasm.
Yes, that was actually the best, I think, showing of how, you know, a relationship affects him and how he struggles with, you know, settling down and realizing, you know, why he can't. And I thought that was very well.
And it's almost like fate won't let him walk away from the suit.
Exactly. Here's a kind of open-ended question, but what do you think, what is your favorite interpretation, you're probably not going to want to answer, but what's your favorite interpretation of Batman? Like, is it, you know, the live action movies, well, the certain one, obviously, like the Chris Nolan movies, or the Burton movies, or the animated Batman, the animated series? You can encompass that with all of Justice League and Batman Beyond, because it's pretty much the same thing. Or is there a certain point in the comics where you think he was, you know, your favorite incarnation, or is it just in general Batman?
I'm sad to say that my familiarity with him in the comics is not what it should be. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I love things that are from the comic book universe, but it's very rare that I read anything beyond graphic novels themselves. So, I mean, I've read a bunch of Batman ones, mm-hmm. but to follow the regular continuity, I don't think I've ever done that with any story. Mm-hmm. But my favorite way that he's been portrayed so far was definitely the animated series.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, Kevin Conroy as the voice of Batman, that's still the voice I hear in my head.
Exactly.
When I read the comic book. So that's amazing there. And he was just right on with the character. I mean, I feel the comics do portray him. I mean, you can't argue that the comics don't portray him accurately because they're the comics, they're mm-hmm. the source material. But I think that the way he was portrayed in the animated series was the most relatable version of Batman.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to this day, I have not seen anything better than, you know, the Batman in the animated series and, you know, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Kevin Conroy, you're right, just the voice of Batman. It's still, like, I can stand other people who voice him sometimes, but still, it's just like, why don't they get Kevin Conroy? He's just, like, the voice of Batman for me. And sure,
what else is he doing?
This is true. Hey, he's made a career out of this now. He's been going since 1992 or whatever, 91, straight on through.
It's a good career in my mind.
Yeah, so I think it was what it was is that, you know, like, not to go through the history of, you know, the different, I mean, like, the comics, you know, it was kind of dark and noirish when it first started when Bob Kane created him. And then, you know, in the 40s, it could kind of, when they introduced Robin, it was kind of, you know, campy and jumpy a little more. And then mm-hmm. it got into the space aliens and stuff, which got really weird. And, you know, then finally in the 60s, you know, when they made the TV show and they made it really, really campy, that was pretty much the death of, not the death of Batman, but I think that may have been his lowest point in people who really enjoyed the character of Batman.
I like to pretend it just never happened.
Well, because it's funny because, you know, I watched there's a channel, I forget which channel it is, but there's some channel, a newer channel that, like, The Hub or something that was playing the 60s show, and I hadn't seen it since I was a kid because I loved it as a kid because I didn't know any better. But, like, mm-hmm. watching it now, you get how it was all tongue-in-cheek. But not once in the series does he ever, like, act that his parents have died. I don't think he even mentions it. He just, like, is just like, oh, we're Batman and Robin, a superhero team. Like, there's no mention of his parents being killed. There's no origin, like, nothing. They just jump right into it, like, where he's just a normal superhero who likes to dress like a bat for some reason and runs around
right.
the city. So, but and so obviously then, you know, in the 70s, after the series was canceled, you know, I'm gonna throw out names that only the hardcore comic people will know, but like a writer named Denny O'Neill and an artist Neil Adams really reinvigorated the character and brought him back to his dark roots, made him they created Ra's al Ghul. Ra's al Ghul, sorry.
That's right.
I corrected myself. I'm like, oh crap, I said it wrong.
I was about to punch you through the microphone.
But they really brought it back to the portrayal closest to the animated series. And then in the 80s, they kind of, you know, weathered back and forth, but still pretty much they kept. And then, of course, Dark Knight, the Dark Knight Returns came out, and that really cemented him as a darker character. And, of course, Tim Burton took that was one of his inspirations for how Batman was portrayed in his movie. And as much as, you know, Batman kills in that movie, and I don't know, there's something about that movie that just makes me laugh because it's so, like, it was at the time I saw it as when I was 10, 9, whatever the hell when it was. That movie just, like, I still, to this day, I think it's awesome, even though it really isn't a Batman movie because it's not, there's so many things in there that they don't really do right. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, so then they did the animated series, which. So that I still think the animated series is like the best incarnation because it sort of, you know, took the best of everything. I mean, you can have him crack jokes at times, but it's only at like the right – they know the right times to have him crack the joke. And it's not like a joke, but it's like a snarky like comment that makes you, you know.
Yeah, he's not walking around with a big smile on his face like friggin' George Clooney and Batman and Robin.
Hey, Freeze.
I'm Bruce Wayne. I'm so happy.
Hi, Freeze. I'm Batman. You know, his Bruce Wayne wasn't actually bad, though, if you had done it. Like, you know, in the animated series when he played Bruce Wayne, he was kind of goofy and happy, you know, to play the part of Bruce Wayne. So that part of George Clooney, I didn't mind. It was just the fact that when he played him as Batman like that, it was just like, oh, God. Oh, right. God, shoot me in the head right now.
There's a time to turn it off.
Thank God for Christopher Nolan. But
thank God. But, all hail Nolan.
mean, you don't want, you didn't want to see the remember what was the I was reading a Wikipedia article the other day, going a random tangent. I had forgotten that apparently they were going to make another one after Batman and Robin called like Batman Triumphant or something by
Schumacher,
and it was going to be Scarecrow with Howard Stern playing the Scarecrow at some point. They had trying to get him to play it, and they were going to have Harley Quinn and Joker and Jack Nicholson come back as a Joker in like a hallucination scene or something. And I just read this and I'm like, really? I don't remember anything hearing anything about this, but I'm glad they never made that.
Yeah, Howard Stern as Scarecrow was a rumor for a long time, and I don't think he even knew about it.
I was gonna say, I mean, yeah, he's tall and lanky, but I don't really see him as the Scarecrow. But not a knock to him. But all right, we're gonna move on from that to another kind of interesting kind of discussion I wanted to have. What are your top three comic book movies of all time? Now I'm talking all time, not this year, not this decade. All time, top three. They don't have to be in a specific order, but of all time, what are the three that you think perfectly, like, you can watch over and over again to the point where it doesn't matter how many times you see it, you still get goosebumps at certain points, and you're just like, this is the epitome of a comic book movie.
Good God.
Put you on the spot.
The thing with that question is it's not just superheroes, and it's looking even beyond that. You get things like Men in Black. I mean, Men in Black's not on my list, but get stuff like Men in Black and Road to Perdition, all those things that some people don't even realize are based on.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies that people don't realize are comic book movies, and that's another thing I want to talk about at some point. I mean, this podcast isn't going to be just about superheroes. I mean, that's what we're talking about today, but I kind of want to show that there's more out there than just superheroes, because a lot of people just think comic books is superheroes. And yes, I love superheroes, but there's a lot more out there than just superheroes. I mean, Scott Pilgrim, yes, it sort of had, some sort of superhero connotations, but there's other comic books out there that aren't superheroes. So if you just don't read comic books because you think it's all about tights and capes, then you're missing out. So
that's why I read comic books.
Well, there you go.
Tights specifically.
Oh, wow.
God. Oh, see, here's the thing. you specifically said not to like break it down, but I did.
Then go for it if you
because to answer the question that you were asking, I'm so neurotic about building lists that I would literally have to spend a couple days looking up like other people's lists and seeing what came from comic books and what didn't. I'd have to eliminate and narrow down and set up like a whole tournament system, like it's the NCAA or something.
Street Fighter.
Because that's just the way my brain operates.
All right, well, why don't we say, this doesn't have to be a permanent, all time.
I narrowed down to a top three of the decade. Is that acceptable?
That sounds good to me. Go for it.
Okay. And this is actually much easier to do because I wrote an article about it. and that's on the Geek Generation site for those who want to see it. But I did do a top 10, but my top three, I think I took a look from what was there and what's come out since then. And I think my top three of the decade still hold true. That being, and actually Mask of the Phantasm would be roughly number one probably, but it just missed the cutoff of the decade. So my number three would be Iron Man.
Okay.
Because I know a lot of people have a beef with Iron Man too, but I thought Iron Man was executed amazingly. It had the right amount of action. The tone was perfect for the character. It had enough humor. RDJ did an amazing job of bringing Tony Stark to life.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step over you, but he was Tony Stark to me. Like when an actor like that does such a good job, I stopped looking at him as an actor and I saw him as Tony Stark. So
yeah, he did it so well that they have copied that pattern not only in the new Avengers cartoon, but they even use a type voice in Marvel vs. Capcom 3,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which I thought was interesting.
That's a good point.
Now he is the quintessential Iron Man idea of what Tony Stark is. Yeah,
but no, I agree. I mean, Iron Man was one of those movies where even the general public, I'm sure Robert Downey Jr., he's a likable actor, but I mean, they went and see the movie and they didn't even really see it as a, like, they could have, it was a comic book movie, but they saw past that and they saw that it was a really, really well done, good movie. And I think, part of that is Jon Favreau's directing, part of it was the writing, part of it was Robert Downey Jr. combination. But you're right, just the tone of it was so well done that, like, I took my mother to see it, and she doesn't know comic books, that she knows of Iron Man, but like she was like, wow, that was a really, really good movie, not just a good comic, but like a good movie. Like, just.
Yeah, and I have no doubt that any movie you're going to put on a list like this is going to take it seriously and say it's not just a comic book movie.
Exactly.
It's a good movie. Exactly. And that really is what separates the cheesier comic book movies from the ones that are actually very successful.
Yeah, exactly.
Number two would be Spider-Man 2. And I know some people prefer the original, but I think, again, like we said, a really good villain mm-hmm. often makes the story far more interesting. I've always really liked villains that were not inherently evil, because that's so easy.
Oh, yeah.
But more so the ones that are misunderstood. So in the Batman universe, that would be Mr. Freeze, which is like my second favorite villain there. Mm-hmm. And in the Spider-Man universe, the way that Dr. Octopus was portrayed in Spider-Man 2 would absolutely fit that mold. So having the Green Goblin, who was kind of just nuts, versus the Dr. Octopus, Peter battling with the whole fact that this guy's like a mentor to him. Yeah. And he's not necessarily doing things because he's evil. He's actually, well, he's nuts too, because the arms.
Yeah. Are
but you can't just go beat the crap out of someone that you are trying to save.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize, I guess, is that Doc Ock was not, they made all that for the movie. And I think it's actually better than the Doc Ock in the comics. Not to say Stan Lee didn't create a good character, but the whole, like you said, and I think a famous, I forget, there's been a lot of people that have said the best villains are the ones that are actually, you can see the humanity in them, and you can just see where they took that one path that led them to, like, Smallville as an example. Lex Luthor, to me, was always just a one-note, like, villain of Superman's. And so, you know, you see in Smallville, you see the path that led him to the path of becoming that villain, and you still see that he had a humanity, and he was a normal person, and then something happened, and you see him going down that path. Mm-hmm. And I think that they really captured that with Dr. Octopus, where in the comics, he was always kind of just like, let's be honest, he was a fat, balding guy with arms that fought Spider-Man. Yeah, he was one of his top villains, but they did a really, really well done job in that movie of making him a human character, as opposed to just being the generic, oh, he's Dr. Octopus. Where I thought, you know, they did an okay job with Green Goblin, but the fact that he looked like a giant Power Ranger or some sort of Japanese anime armored character in the first movie just really wrecked that visual of me taking him seriously. So
right, losing the mask and losing the emotion that he could show through it.
Exactly.
Was a definite issue.
Yeah, but no, I agree. Spider-Man 2, definitely. Spider-Man 3 will never be spoken of again, but the Spider-Man 2 is definitely one of the best Spider-Man movies of all time.
The number one, a lot of people would assume that I would choose The Dark Knight, mm-hmm. because Dark Knight is arguably the best Batman movie ever. But for me, the best superhero movie and Batman movie, aside from Mask of the Phantasm, of course, is Batman Begins. Hmm. Because to me, The Dark Knight is a really great movie, but The Dark Knight is about Harvey and Joker.
True.
Whereas Batman Begins is about Bruce.
Yeah.
So I think that I love origin stories. I love that they really showed Batman accurately here, to the point where the speech that he gives to Rachel at the very end is one of my favorite things in Batman media, period, where she says to him that this is the mask, Bruce,
yep.
and now the real face is the one that criminals fear every night. So that, to me, just personifies Batman as a character.
Do you want to hear a really creepy thing? I just got goosebumps when you said that. Like, that's how good of a line. I'm not even joking. I don't, people think I'm joking. I'm not
It's because I'm a fantastic actor. That's
No, it's just, you're right. I had totally forgotten about that line until you just said it. And, like, it's so well written and so true to the character. And it's almost encapsulizes the character in, like, a sentence or two of, like, that's just like, I can't, that's just amazing. I completely forgot about that line, but you're right. That's, and I think the thing about Batman Begins is that I will say, I think Dark Knight was a better, fun ride to watch, where Batman Begins was, I really enjoyed seeing the road of Bruce becoming Batman, the training, because they never really, you know, in the Tim Burton Batman, I mean, they completely just disregarded how he became Batman. They did his origin, but they never showed how he became Batman. It was just sort of like, okay, he just got put on this suit with armor and he went out there. And
right.
But it actually showed, you know, the training and the steps and how he became. It was so well done. And I think a lot of people overlook the fact that they're like, oh, well, you know, the rest of the movie had Scarecrow and Ra's al Ghul. And, you know, when there's a lot of people that love the movie, but they always focus on that part as opposed to the part of, you know, I look at it as the origin part that I really enjoy in the training. And yeah, that, and you know, I hate Katie Holmes with a passion, but I give her credit. She didn't know. I thought she was pretty good in that movie. You know, I hate her with the passion, but.
Yeah, she didn't annoy me. And actually, one of the issues that I have with Dark Knight, and probably the only issue I have with Dark Knight, is the fact that she wasn't back for it.
Yeah, I thought Maggie Gyllenhaal, I mean, she's a great actress, but all right, no one flame me. If you want to flame me, I'll give you my email address after. But I think Maggie Gyllenhaal is just not attractive at all. I think she's just, I don't find her attractive. And it kind of like took me out of it. And like, she, not that I need to find an actress attractive, but she just looked... She wasn't the same actress, and she didn't look anything like Katie Holmes, and it was just like, I don't know, it just didn't have the, yeah, I think you're right, I think if it was Katie Holmes still, there would have been like a, you know, a connection from the first movie where I think it was kind of lost because it was a different actress.
Yeah, and we've had that discussion on the other show before, but yeah, that's a huge issue when
they switch roles.
When you jump actors or actresses between two movies, you lose that historical emotion that you felt for that character. So when things play out the way they do in The Dark Knight, they don't mean as much as they should have.
I think it matters more, especially if it's a ongoing saga, like say Batman Begins, Dark, like say the Hulk movies, since they were not connected, it didn't really matter as much.
Right. Because,
yeah. But exactly, when it's something, the same character in a continuing movie series, then yeah, it definitely creates a huge negative when you switch it. But although, I mean, everyone raved how much of a better actress Maggie Gyllenhaal was. She is a better actress than
she is, no doubt.
But again, yeah, I think the emotional connection just wasn't there. So,
yeah.
But I will now give you my top three comic book movies of all time.
Alrighty, good. I was gonna say I'm not letting you off the hook if I had to do.
It's probably some surprises on here. I did have Iron Man as number three. God damn, so can't talk about it anymore now. Iron Man, for pretty much all the reasons you said, I thought it was one of those, for it was such a gamble for Marvel because it was their first movie where they produced it and, you know, funded it, and it was a jump for them, and if it failed, they would have been done. Well, not the company, but they would have been done. They would have had to go back and, you know, sell their characters out to movie studios again. But
right.
It just was some fate had it, and it just everything clicked, and it was a huge success. And, you know, from there we got Iron Man 2. To, you know, now we're having Thor, Captain America, the Avengers, everything. It's an amazing on what that one movie did for Marvel in production and movie wise. So. And plus, it was, like I said before, it was a phenomenal movie, great casting. Everything about it was well done. Iron Man 2, not so much. That's not on my list. But number two is Superman the movie. And I know because you said yours was from the decade. I did mine of all time. Superman the movie, looking back, there's things about it I don't like. You know, like I don't like the portrayal of Lex Luthor, but it was made in 1978. So at that time, you know, whatever. He was kind of a comedy character. He wasn't exactly a striking figure. But to me, Christopher Reeve was Superman to me. I remember watching that movie over and over again on VHS as a kid from the time I was five till, like, I just loved that movie so much. And it was such a great movie because, you know, it starts off, you have the first quarter or third of the movie in Krypton, and you have that like ice cold sterile like space thing, and then you go all the way to Smallville where it's sort of like the Norman Rockwell, you know, Ma and Pa type country thing, and then you go into Metropolis where it's a city. It's almost like three different movies, and I really think Christopher Reeve he really did a great job. When you saw him in those tights as Superman, I believed that he was Superman. I believed that he just had that look and that I just can't describe it, that like aura that you...
Well, yeah, he didn't need to be this huge jacked up guy, and that wasn't what Superman was at that time anyway. He had such a presence.
That's the word, presence. He just had that presence. I mean, he just looked. I mean, he crossed his arms, and, you know, I remember in Superman 2, and he just like falls up to the moment, and he goes, "General, would you care to step outside?" Like, he just has that presence of it. This is Superman. And I just think the movie itself was, you know, you see the whole story of Superman, and it's a little overly long, I think, nowadays. Probably people would think it's long because it's like 2.5 hours. But I really, really loved the movie. And There was a little bit of campiness in it, but it wasn't. I mean, Clark Kent was bumbling, but I actually liked that because it showed that, you know, the obviously no one would ever believe that he was Superman because he was so bumbling. And Christopher Reeve mm-hmm. could pull that off perfectly as well. I mean, almost playing two completely different characters. And you know, Gene Hackman kind of mailed it in. I don't really think he was a great Lex Luthor, but especially since he didn't become bald until the very like last 5 seconds of the movie,
right.
Took his wig off.
I do think it's interesting that Smallville's starting to borrow that idea of having a more bumbling Clark Kent, more
yes.
human.
Yes. And I mean, I knew they were eventually going to have that. I'd hoped, because if not, it was like, how is no one going to know that, like, all these years? It's like, well, Clark Kent seems pretty normal. Like, you know, they didn't really play off his bumbling at all. I mean, he was always. So, yeah, I'm kind of happy they're leaning that way. I mean, but yeah.
Took him long enough.
Seriously. 10 seasons, and we finally decided. Although, again, Margot Kidder, I wasn't a big fan of her Lois Lane either. But as a kid, it didn't matter because it was all about Superman. And I just have so many memories of that movie that I think, you know, I remember I think I wore out the VHS tape because I watched it so many times. Like, it was just mm-hmm. it was just a phenomenal movie. And the music, everything, the John Williams score. And, you know, and then, of course, you know, the franchise went down the shitter after that movie. I mean, if you watch, the Richard Donner cut was good of two, but 3 and 4 are just fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
as a kid, I loved 4. I'm like, oh, the nuclear man, this is awesome. He's fighting him on the moon. And
oh yeah, it's wicked cool when you're a kid.
I was like, oh, this is awesome. He's like an evil Superman. And I even got like, I used to have to run out of the room when like he was on the moon and he's getting like slammed into the moon by the nuclear man and like get bleeding and stuff.
No Superman.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. And then Superman Returns was more of the same. Now it was hopefully. Hopefully the new one will, but now I'm hearing they're having script troubles with that, so I don't know. Superman seems to be cursed with too many problems. They maybe
in Nolan we trust.
I hope so. And number one, I had a really hard time because this is gonna sound, you're gonna be like, you're a Batman fan, you're a disgrace. For some reason, I love the 1989 original Tim Burton Batman, because, again, I grew up on it, and that was my Batman movie. Although I love The Dark Knight and Batman Begins as well, so it's all sort of like a battle for number one, where if mm-hmm. I take the point of the 1989 movie, just because as a kid I loved Michael Keaton as Batman, and I thought he did, now looking back, you know, he was a good Batman for what he portrayed in that movie, but he wasn't a good Batman. You know what I mean? It wasn't
right.
That incarnation of Batman, good, but not. I don't know. I love Jack Nicholson as the Joker as a kid. I just loved that movie. It's infinitely quotable. Even if you watch it now, it's not a
good
movie.
It is. It's so quotable.
The quotes in it, like, my friends will always just throw out random quotes from that movie because it's so quotable. And me, the Prince music, it's such a wacky movie. And I think probably why I have such, like, a still respect for it is because without that movie, there really be no comic book movies now. Like, that really set the bar for, like, it made a huge bank when it came out. And it was like, that summer, Batman was everywhere. You couldn't go down nowhere without someone wearing a Batman shirt, Batman everything. Mm-hmm. They really, I mean, whether or not you like the movie, the merchandising and everything just hit all at the same time for that movie. And it was just, and I don't know, as a kid, I remember actually going to the grocery store and my parents, you know, buying the movie and having to watch it before they let me watch it because it was PG-13 and I was like 10 at the time. So, but.
Well, no, it was a great movie. It kept the darker tone thanks to Tim Burton.
Yes.
And they really succeeded in that. Nicholson, like you said, was genius as Joker. Keaton was a great Batman. It's just that we hadn't seen anything better.
Well, I think that might have been it, exactly. And, you know, watching it now, the script is all over the place. There's no really, like, coherent plot. It's sort of, and I read a bunch of books on the making of it. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff that happened, like the original ending. Vicky Vale was supposed to die, and they had it.
Yep.
They ran out of time for shoot, so they had to, like, rig the end. They did the ending in like a day. They like rewrote the ending like 3 times, and so like it's definitely, you can tell when you watch the ending of the movie that it's just sort of thrown together at the very end. It all just like nothing fits. But yeah, you're right, for that time. And I think the Danny Elfman music, I remember listening to that score over.
Oh, that
over,
that is one of the most over, amazing movie over. Themes of all time.
Yeah, you just, and then of course the animated series took it because it's so yep. good. It's just, that's bad. That's the one thing I felt about the Nolan movies. I do love Hans Zimmer's score in the movies, but I do miss the Danny Elfman theme.
Sure.
I think that's the only, but so it's weird. I like that Batman has a place in my heart, but yeah, The Dark Knight, I think I just don't ever remember watching a movie and just feeling such emotion and just watching Heath Ledger as the Joker, and again, one of those things where everyone was like, oh, he's going to be fucking terrible. He's going to be like, oh, he's going to be a gay Joker because, you know, he, with his poofy hair and his Australian accent. And then everyone shut their mouth the second they saw that movie because he, you know, just owned it. And he made a different interpretation of the Joker. He didn't take it from the comics. He didn't take it. He borrowed some things from other things, but he made it his own. And
yeah, it was definitely a brand new interpretation.
And it was the thing, one of those things you see once and you'll never forget. Like, his performance was, I can't, and you know, I mean, no, like, I think, like, you're right, it's sort of, he's sort of not overshadowed Bale in the movie, but Batman didn't have much to do because, like you said, it was all about Harvey, the fall of Harvey Dent and Joker. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked the movie, but I think part of it was because, you know, but I really, for a summer blockbuster, that really was a good movie, because most of the time they're just like, you know, it's a summer blockbuster, but it's really crappy, you know?
Right.
This
right.
one was just so well written, so well directed, and after you saw it, you're like, what did I, oh my, yeah, people complained it was too long. I didn't care. I loved every minute of it, and I just, and same with Batman. Batman Begins was very close to as good as it, but I didn't really like, I thought they could have done the Ra's al Ghul stuff a little better. I didn't really, I liked the surprise Agreed. Of having Liam Neeson being him, but I didn't really feel that the audience got it, and they didn't really do a good job of making Ra's al Ghul as cool as he could have been, like, in the comics or the animated.
They didn't say his name right.
That too.
Which still irks me. I have two major issues with Batman Begins, yep. One of which is the fact that they couldn't say Ra's al Ghul correctly after they did it for, what, three or four seasons of the animated
Seriously,
series
you think
properly.
Could have just been like, that's not how you say it.
I know, right? The other issue I have, and it's actually one of the same issues I have with the 1989 Batman, is that at the end of the movie when they're on the train and Bruce is like, oh, what is it? I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you either.
Yeah.
That's not Batman's mentality.
Thank you. That's a great point that I was going to bring.
And he does it to the Joker, too, in the 89
yep.
one. He just lets him fall.
He does. It's in Batman Returns. Penguin's, like, pretty much dead. He doesn't care. Just leaves. Everyone's, like, the place is exploding. And it's just like, do they not get Batman doesn't kill? That's what he would never, ever do that. Like, that's just.
Right.
And like, well, especially in the 89 movie, it's much worse because he's just, like, killing the friggin' goons all over the place.
Actually, I was going to. Is he killing them?
I think at least he's pulling him down. Like, there's a couple of times where I think.
Yeah, that's true. They're pretty harsh falls, right?
Yeah, where he, like, just, yeah. like, he's not very, like, I don't know, man. And, like, they talk about in the beginning, one of the goons in the beginning is like, yeah, man, he drops him off the roof or something. And the guy's like, I don't know, dude. There's just, it seems.
Right. So that whole dynamic between Batman and Joker and the reason that Joker's obsessed with Batman is not there.
Yeah.
Because, and they do it perfectly in The Dark Knight. He's like, oh, kill me.
Yeah.
Come on.
That,
do it.
That was the, like, that scene just, that probably is my favorite scene from Dark Knight. Just, like, that whole scene in the police station is just. Mm-hmm. Amazing. I can't, like, so yeah, so I really crapped out on my fish pitch, but I guess I shall say Dark Knight is my number one. So I had a good
the other thing in the sorry to cut you off,
go for it.
The 89 Batman one is, I actually think, is not as bad as far as the way he takes out Joker, because that is something more like Batman would do, because Joker had a way out. He could have let go.
You're true.
Before
right.
the
right.
thing broke.
Right.
But it was his choice that ultimately did him
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I just don't like, you're right, in Batman Begins, I don't know why they did that. It's just sort of like, and of course everyone's like, well, you know, Ra's al Ghul's immortal, but, like, the general audience doesn't know that, and, you know, they didn't really play that up that he, I mean, he maybe has survived, but who knows.
They mentioned it, like, once.
Yeah, but they never, yeah, exactly, but it wasn't like, I just think that's where they although Batman Begins does have my favorite Bruce Wayne scene of all time, I think, where he is in the party right before Ra's al Ghul comes.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he tells everyone, he's like, you sycophants, you come here, you eat my food. And he's like, you can all just leave. Just, like, the greatest scene ever. I laugh every time I watch it. It's just great.
Yeah, that's him playing up the mask really well. Yeah.
This is some kind of sad news that kind of happened right before we went on the air. I'm going to read the article. Dwayne McDuffie, who, I don't know, people who read comics probably know his name. He was, created the character Static Shock. He created the Milestone universe for DC. He wrote Justice League of America. He wrote, Fantastic Four. He wrote Deathlok in the 90s. And, most importantly, he was one of the writers on Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And he just wrote a bunch of the DC animated movies, including All-Star Superman that came out today. But sadly, He's passed away today, and I'm going to read you the article that was posted on comicbookresources.com. It says, CBR News has learned that comic writer, animation producer, and respected industry veteran Dwayne McDuffie passed away. The cause of death and specific details are unknown at this time. A native of Detroit, McDuffie officially joined the comics industry as part of the Marvel Comics editorial in the late 80s. Working on a special projects for the publisher, he quickly made his name as a writer, creating series such as Damage Control and Deathlok to critical acclaim. He soon left the staff to become a full-time freelance writer, becoming a voice in the industry for diversity, particularly fighting against stereotypical portrayals of people of color on the comic book page. In 1993, McDuffie co-founded Milestone Media along with creators Dennis Cohen, Michael Davis, and Derek T. Dingle. The company's mission statement involved expanding the role of minorities in comics both on the page on and off as they launched through DC, a line of superhero comics that included Static, Icon, and Zombie, all of which McDuffie had a hand in creating. Over the years, the writer contributed to scores of notable comic book launches and series, always with a keen eye on the character, regardless of race. In 2000, his character Static made the leap into television in the Saturday morning cartoon hit Static Shock. In 2003, an episode of the show dealing with gun violence earned the writer the Humanitas Prize. I hope I said that right. In recent years, McDuffie pursued dual tracks in animation and comics writing. He served as a story editor for the popular Justice League and Justice League Unlimited animated series and wrote a number of DC's recent direct-to-DVD animated films such as Justice League Crisis on Two Earths and All-Star Superman. McDuffie had notable runs on comic series Fantastic Four and Justice League of America in 2007 and 2008, often incorporating black characters into the core of the fabled franchises. His latest work was the script for the All-Star Superman animated adaptation, which went on sale today in stores across America. The writer is survived by his wife, though at this time no further details are available on what exactly happened to McDuffie. I and the staff of this website that would like to offer our deepest condolences to his family and friends. So that's
absolutely so much so that I did everything within my power not to laugh when you said Dingle.
I seriously was doing that too, and I'm like, I'm reading it, I'm like, dude, Dingle, and I'm like, oh god, I can't start laughing, giggling at this because this is like, but yeah, definitely a shocking, shocking loss. He was relatively young. I think he was in his late 30s, early 40s. Definitely a giant pioneer in the industry, and it's kind of sad because I just last night, when I was, you know, working on some stuff, I was had his one of his episodes of Justice League Unlimited on in the background, and I remember seeing the name, and then just to read this today is just like, I think everyone in the comic industry is in a state of shock. If you look on Twitter and Facebook, it's just I just hope it's a sad day, and it's just weirdly coincidental that it's the same day that All-Star Superman came out. So just a weird coincidence. And
it is odd how those things in the comic book universe tend to happen. I mean, the same thing with like Heath Ledger and the Joker and like all that.
Just odd bizarre coincidental stuff. So let's move on. And my next.
And the Crow, by the way, speaking of.
Yes, odd I totally comic forgot about. Book. Good call.
Oh, my God.
That was a weird thing. I completely forgot about that.
That rocked me when that happened back in the day. It did. That was crazy.
It was just such a freak accident. And then the fact that like the whole movie was about death and rebirth, and it's just a weird.
And just knowing that if they shot the movie in order, it would have never been done. But they shot
out of order.
They shot those first scenes of like the robbery and everything as the last thing of the movie, so they had the rest of it done.
So
it's just it's crazy.
Yeah, and it this is one of those things, you know, you read about and just like it's still to this day it's still it's just weird, just like those weird things. But all right, I'm gonna move on to our last topic of today or this episode. What comic movies are you most looking forward to in 2011? And I know we kind of covered this on you had a pod. I think we've covered this on the other show a little bit, but really kind of wanted to go into a detailed discussion about. There's a lot of comic book movies coming out this year. I think probably the most there's ever been in one single year. Like 2011.
That's a ton.
Yeah, seems to be like between. Thor, Captain America, X-Men First Class, Green Lantern. I know I'm missing one. I can't think of. And it's not in my show notes. I can't think of. There's another one that's not a major Marvel or DC one, but there's two or three others that are like were independent comics that were created.
Priest is one.
Thank you, Priest. Yep. And I think there's one other, but I don't remember what it was. But it just seems like. I don't know. Do you think it's almost going to be overkill this year, or do you think?
You kidding me? I couldn't be happier.
Well, there was an article in Entertainment Weekly. They're saying basically, like, you know, they're pushing it too much, where like they're But I mean, obviously it's a successful formula, so now all of the studios are like basically looking for anything to make into a comic book movie at this point, anything they want to put out there because, you know, it's making money. So the other thing...
What's a fine balance? I think they have to be careful about how much they focus on the superhero side. They've always been making comic book movies. It's just that nobody's ever been paying attention to the source material.
It wasn't until, I think, what, the first X-Men hit that people started realizing, like, oh, wait, there's actually... Like, Blade came out in 97, and, you know, that was Marvel's first big hit, but no one...
Blade was friggin' awesome.
Yeah, but no one, like, it didn't really... But when X-Men hit in 2000, that sort of set loose the boulder rolling of, you know, like, all the comic movies going on and on and on and on and on, where there's been dips and, you know, terrible movies like, you know, Daredevil, Punisher, Warzone, Elektra. I won't mention any others, but
Jonah Hex,
the worst movie of all time. Never watch that movie again. We'll burn in hell. How did that not get nominated for a Razzie? I don't know, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Oh wait, no, Megan Fox got nominated for it, didn't she?
Why wasn't the, like, worst movie, like, it wasn't even,
I don't know,
that's whoever made... Shocker, the same guy who wrote that movie did the screenplay for Batman and Robin. Shocker. Anyways. Yeah. But so what movie are you looking forward to in 2011 of comic book wise? Out of
As far as characters go, I dig obviously the X-Men the most out of those, but First Class, I don't know.
Yeah, sort of a question mark right now to see how.
Yeah, it looks better than what I originally thought, but still isn't getting me like super hyped up.
Yeah.
I dig Green Lantern a lot, and I've always wanted to see a Green Lantern movie because I thought it would just be visually amazing. But again, that's one I'm not sure that they're tackling the way that they should be. I still don't like the alteration of so many, like, let's make everything organic and alien.
Alien, yep. That's retarded. I don't know if you saw there was a toy fair. The toy fair was last weekend. They had some of the...
Yeah, I saw some.
Look good. The fact that, like, I don't know if I mentioned this in the last show, if I'm repeating myself too bad now. I know I posted on Facebook. The fact that DC and Warner Brothers did not put a Super Bowl trail out for Green Lantern worries the shit out of me. The fact that, you know, they have... The movie's coming out right around the same time as Thor, and Thor's got like two official trailers already. They've had a TV spot on the Super Bowl. Green Lantern, meanwhile, has an online trailer and nothing else. They're not, they're promoting it in the back of the Green Lantern comic books, but that's not going to help them talk to the general public. And you know, I'm wondering if they're worried about it. And you know, I read it, I forget where I read it, in a movie magazine. This is pretty much DC's like big franchise that they were hoping to, because the way they wrote the script is that they already expect to have two or three other Green Lantern movies right after this. Like, they put stuff in there that's going to build, and I'm like, dude, this movie looks like it's going to not... I could be wrong, and I could watch, it's probably going to make $1 zillion, but the way things are going, it doesn't look very good, and yet they're already like planning on it being this huge hit. And I mean, they need as much help as they can get with there, because all they have is Superman and Batman, and Batman's done after the next one, and they're going to have to reboot it again. And Superman, I hope that's successful and they can continue with that, but without that, they have nothing on the table, nothing coming out. A couple years ago, there was rumors of a Green Arrow prison type movie thing where he was trapped in prison with supervillains. Never came out. They had a Joss Whedon penned Wonder Woman script that was phenomenal that they passed on.
Rumors of the Flash have been going around forever.
Yeah, there's always rumors. Yeah, we're gonna make a Flash movie. Still haven't heard anything about it. So I mean, they really, for something that they really need to be worried about, they don't seem to be worried about it. And I'm like, dude, this is like gonna make or break your Marvel's got three other movies coming out this year. I mean, three movies total, and you've got one, and it's just, I don't know. It doesn't look good. I'll see it, and hopefully, I'm hoping it's good, but the longer it goes on now, I'm starting to get more and more and more worried, so.
Yeah, I am too, which leaves me with the one that I actually am excited about, which is Captain America.
Yeah.
And I never thought it would be the one out of the ones that are coming out. I was almost like the least likely on my radar, but the more and more I see about it, it really just feels like it's going to be Indiana Jones with superpowers, and how can that not be awesome?
Yeah, and I mean, I give them credit. You know, they could have easily just, you know, not done a period piece and just put him, you know, go all the way and put him, you know, in the present time. But the fact they're doing it in World War II, I think, is going to make it stand out, and it looks... obviously, we haven't seen a lot of it, but from what we've seen, it looks really, really good. And I mean, even, you know, like Scott Toomey, who's also, you know, been on the other show, he's a friend of mine and ours. He's not a Captain America fan at all. He's never really read anything. He is like, he's stoked. He's like, I can't wait for that Captain America movie. Like, it seems that it is at least getting people excited about the character. And Captain America is a hard character to relate to, I think, in this time, because he's very, you know, all about America and, like, patriotism, and, you know, there's a lot of people that don't really feel that way about, you know, wearing the patriotism on their sleeve, you know, kind of thing. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how it does, but I like where they're going, and it looks really well done. There's people bitching about the costume, and you know what, they can, you know, let's have rubber ears. Yeah, that worked out so well the last time. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Speaking of costume, there was something I stumbled across the other day, too, with the cap thing, is that I remember interviewing someone at Sega about the Captain America First Avenger tie-in game. And at the time, the footage they showed us was the classic Captain America costume in all the gameplay. And the screenshots that I have seen since... I believe saying that they were going to have Chris Evans voice Captain America in the game as well, even though it's not a direct tie-in. It has an original story, but it's set in the same basic idea. They have replaced the character model with the movie version of the costume.
Interesting. They'll probably have it, I'm sure, as like the original, the normal one, as probably like a, you know, either downloadable content or a unlockable, I'm sure.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. But that's cool. I like that. I that's good, because I think – I don't know how good the game is going to be, because, I mean, not to jump into video games, but I know that we don't really cover – but the comic book video games have been pretty piss poor with movie tie-ins. Like the Iron Man and Iron Man 2 games were absolutely terrible. Played both them.
Yeah.
And Sega did those, and now Sega's doing Cap and Thor. Makes me kind of
weird.
So, but, you know, at least we have Arkham City coming out at the end of the year. Woohoo! So – But so yeah, I think I'm looking. I was gonna say, you know, in my heart of hearts, I was looking forward to Green Lantern the most character wise. But after seeing all the trailer, and I can't. I think I'm actually looking forward to Thor the most. I think just after the last trailer I saw, like every time I see it, I just can't wait for this movie. It's just gonna. It looks so well done, so kick ass, and so it just they did such a great job of making it. Blend into like realism. Like you're talking about a Norse god coming to Earth, and you know how cheesy they could have potentially made that, like him with his giant helmet walking around Earth, and you know, it just looks great, and it's got, you know, your typical humor, it's got great action sequences, it's got great actors and actresses, and I think it's gonna
Natalie Portman,
Kat Dennings. It looks like it's gonna surprise a lot of people, and I think it's gonna do well. A lot of people were like, "Well, no one knows who Thor is," and it's gonna. That was pretty much, you know. But I think it's gonna surprise some people, and I hate to say it, but after watching that, the older Thor trailer. It makes the Green Lantern trailer look like it was like a fan-made YouTube video. Like I don't know. Just it. I don't know. It makes me sad.
Speaking of fan-made,
yeah, segue.
Videos, the Nathan Fillion one looked like a way better trailer for Green Lantern movie than
seriously
the actual trailer for the Green.
Can
Lantern
we just
movie.
Make that movie instead and just scrap? Now, I mean,
that's what I'm talking about.
And it scares me because Geoff Johns, who writes Green Lantern, he's the writer. He reinvigorated the Green Lantern franchise to the point where they could make a movie. He's supposedly, you know, hands-on on the script, and I'm just like, really? This is he keeps claiming it's going to be an amazing movie, and I'm like, I trust him, but I don't really trust him at this point,
right?
So I don't know, but you have anything else? I don't have anything else, so I think that's gonna do it for this week. What I'd like to know from our viewing or listening audience, not viewing audience, is do you
if
like
they're viewing it, then they have all sorts of weird mental conditions going on.
Do you like the format as a discussion format? Like, do you want more discussions on comic book stuff, or do you want to? Would you rather something else, more like a review or news? Or I'm open to suggestions. It's pretty much I'm gonna just be every probably gonna be bi-weekly. I'm gonna just, you know, talk about comics, whether it's through discussions, reviews, news, whatever. And I want to hear suggestions from you guys. If you guys have any suggestions on what you want to hear, anything you want me to review, I'd be open to hearing any of that. You can send questions, comments, suggestions to Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, at thegeneration.com. Obviously, I would like you to spread the word, and you should all visit our website at www.thegeekgeneration.com. You can find us on iTunes, and please subscribe, and we also need reviews, so please write one. Please, please, please. If you'd also like to submit an article to the website, send it to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And finally, you can follow me on Twitter or send me suggestions, feedback, anything on Twitter at www.twitter.com/XanderHarris. And our website is on Twitter at www.twitter.com/geekgeneration. And I want to thank Rob for, you know, doing this with me, because it's kind of a work in progress. So we'll see how it goes.
I'm still getting used to this role reversal. I got to tell you, though, knowing that I don't have to go and edit this thing later makes me feel really great. I love that.
So, but no, I thank you for your time, and I appreciate you doing this with me.
No, it was a good time. I love being here.
All right, guys. So I'll see you in 2 weeks. So thanks for listening.